Hello and welcome to the Game Theory Podcast. I'm your host, Sam Vecini. We are presented by The Athletic. Today on the show, we're talking deep about Warriors-Lakers Game 4. We will then talk a little bit about Knicks Heat Game 4, a game that the Miami Heat won, I believe, 109-101. And then we will talk a little bit about Nikola Jokic not being suspended for shoving Matt Ishbia, the Phoenix Suns owner, in a little bit of a strange situation in the corner in last night's Game 4 that the Phoenix Suns won and brought that series back to a 2-2 tie before it heads back to Denver. But for the most part, this show will be about the Golden State Warriors and the Los Angeles Lakers. And we're going to dive in to a lot of tape talking about the Lakers defense versus the Golden State Warriors offense, because I think that that is the key thing that is swinging this series at the end of the day. There are moments where the Warriors offense looks great, and it's very clear what those moments look like. And then there are moments where the Lakers defense looks great, and I think it's very clear what those moments tend to look like. The big thing coming into this game that, by the way, I should note, the Los Angeles Lakers won 104-101. Anybody that is getting their information from this show should know that, in case anyone gambled on this game and needs a final score, needs a total. 104-101 Lakers. The big thing coming into this game was how the Golden State Warriors would adjust to some of the things that I talked about within the Game 3 podcast that we broke down, talking about the Lakers defense. One of the things that the Lakers did was they pulled Anthony Davis off of Draymond Green, put him on Jamichael Green or any of the other players on the Los Angeles Lakers, any of the other players on the Golden State Warriors they felt were deficient shooters in any way or reluctant shooters in any way, and just completely bottled up the paint using Anthony Davis's length. Now, in Game 4, the adjustment was how would the Warriors change their lineups in order to best make it work, in order to involve Stephen Curry in as many ball screens as possible, and thus involve Anthony Davis in as many ball screens as possible. My theory on the previous episode was that they would start Dante DiVincenzo. We talked about that with Adam Spinella. I thought that the Lakers would be a little bit less inclined to guard Dante with Anthony Davis, a guard. But at the end of the day, they decided to go with Gary Payton II. And while I was a little bit concerned about that, when you just immediately off the rip see it, because your immediate reaction there is going to be that, okay, they're just going to put Anthony Davis on Gary Payton. Why are you doing that? The reason that the Warriors did that, in my opinion, and I think it bore out on tape, which we'll break down here momentarily, was that they wanted two players that they trusted in short role opportunities to be able to be partners for Stephen Curry in ball screens. They figured that Gary Payton would be guarded by Anthony Davis going into this. And thus, by starting Gary Payton and using him as the screener, they knew that they would be able to involve Anthony Davis in those screening opportunities. And Anthony Davis is a very good pick-and-roll defender, but the best way to attack the Lakers defensively, given that LeBron is kind of, he takes some possessions off defensively as the low man from time to time in terms of being that rim rotation guy as the low man. D'Angelo Russell can be a little bit lax as the low man in settings like that for the Lakers, where he is responsible for tagging the roller or coming up and trying to guard that short roll while the man recovers back to his guy. I think that the plan worked very well for the Warriors, as we'll see in a second. And ultimately the problem is that they went away from it. And maybe we should just start breaking down the tape here momentarily, just as soon as I talk very briefly also about what we saw from Anthony Davis tonight. Anthony Davis goes for 23 points, 15 rebounds, 2 assists, 3 steals, was absolutely incredible in this game, was very good defensively in the second half after an adjustment that we'll talk about momentarily. I thought that he continues to look like the best player in this series outside of Stephen Curry. Stephen Curry is controlling and dictating tempo when he has the opportunity to do so. But Anthony Davis is also starting to make his jump shots again. That's a very key thing. It felt like early on the Warriors were a little bit successful in bringing him away from the basket. Draymond Green has done a pretty good job on him defensively at times, I think. But if Anthony Davis is going to make his jump shots, he is a lethal offensive player. He has 3 offensive rebounds as well in this game. I thought he was absolutely tremendous. Everything they brought to the table with Anthony Davis was really sharp. The other side of this for the Warriors, starting Gary Payton II, is the defensive value they get from Gary Payton. And we saw that specifically tonight on D'Angelo Russell. D'Angelo Russell goes 1-for-10. Gary Payton spent a lot of the evening guarding D'Angelo Russell. Being able to take D'Angelo Russell out of this game, I thought, was a critical factor. And frankly, if I was the Warriors, I would go back to that well and start the same exact lineup again in game 5. I think they got what they needed out of Payton in this adjustment defensively, and they actually got what they needed out of him offensively. Payton goes for 15 points on 7-of-9 shooting, and I thought he was really impactful throughout the entirety of this game. So let's just kind of dive into the tape here and talk a little bit about everything that we saw. It's a long batch of tape. I'm going to go through seemingly almost every ball screen that I think the Golden State Warriors ran tonight. Maybe not all of them, but we're going to go through a lot of them here just to kind of break down exactly what I'm seeing. So this is the first offensive possession, I believe, that wasn't a transition possession maybe for the Golden State Warriors. You're going to see here Stephen Curry coming across half court, Anthony Davis guarding Gary Payton II, and Gary Payton comes up, sets the screen. They immediately hit the short roll. Stephen Curry strings out Anthony Davis just a little bit toward the wing. Obviously, Anthony Davis has to continue to cover because Stephen Curry is such an incredible pull-up shooter. As he strings him out, that defender gets further and further away from Gary Payton in that short roll scenario. He hits Gary Payton on the short roll, and Gary Payton is very good in these circumstances. This is going to be a problem for the rest of the evening as well, outside of this little first quarter run here. Andrew Wiggins had a very rough night, I thought. I'll look at the numbers here while we're talking. He goes 6-of-14 from the field for 17 points. He was the only Warriors, or no, he was one of 2 Warriors starters that were actually a negative tonight, along with Draymond Green, in terms of plus minus. And in my opinion, Wiggins, the team's lack of faith in him as a short roller and some of his missed opportunities in the fourth quarter when he was wide open not trying to shoot, ultimately hindered this team. Here we go. Andrew Wiggins takes this pull-up jumper, misses. But the process, I think, is there in terms of the offense, and you can kind of see it already. Here we go. 10-minute mark of the first quarter. Again, Gary Payton comes up, sets the screen a little bit higher this time, creating a scenario where Anthony Davis already is going to be pulled out, and that pocket pass is going to be very available. Gary Payton's a very good screener, and he's a very good short roller, and he's a very good athlete, is the other piece of this puzzle. One thing that really goes underrated, I think, about Draymond Green as a short roller, we often talk about how good he is as a short roll threat. It's that he can do it at speed. He can get downhill at high speeds and make decisions rapidly at a high level. Gary Payton also has that ability. Gary Payton is a tremendous athlete who grew up playing point guard and really processes the court really, really well. So here you're going to see he hits the short roll, and Payton does this. He gets downhill at speed. It's hard to recover onto these guys whenever they're flying downhill like they are here with Payton. Payton just gets downhill. He hits the wraparound when LeBron tries to go for the charge. Just really, really, really smart here from Payton. Really smart process from the Golden State Warriors. Here we go again. Golden State Warriors. Again, Payton comes up, sets a fairly high ball screen. AD is in coverage. AD's in coverage. And you just look as Steph just kind of waits to string him out. The whole time, Stephen Curry is trying to get Anthony Davis to commit to him. That is his goal. That is his idea. Anthony Davis backs off, hoping that Steph, or hoping that Austin Reeves has recovered and hoping that Steph does not continue his drive. AD kind of realizes that Steph is continuing his drive, coming at him, trying to engage him as the big defender. As soon as AD puts his hands out again, Steph just immediately recognizes it, hits the little pass right in the dunker spot to Gary Payton where he is rolled to. Payton just hits that beautiful little reverse layup. Perfect process here for the Golden State Warriors. This is exactly what you're looking for. The other fun thing was they started to do some wrinkles off of this. And as soon as they realize that Draymond Green is being picked up by Anthony Davis, what they do is they decide to have Draymond Green come up and set the screen immediately, regardless of who it's for. This time it's for Clay. He hits Draymond Green. Draymond Green hits Andrew Wiggins diving from that opposite corner. This is just classic Draymond Green short roll stuff here, right? Processes the game fast, understands where Andrew Wiggins is. Wiggins cutting from the corner into the basket. Easy bucket. These are easy buckets for the Golden State Warriors. That's 11 points in 4 minutes already for the Warriors as they start to attack this Anthony Davis ball screen scenario. That is what they came into the game trying to do. That's what these first 4 minutes tell me. They came in with a plan and they attacked the plan and it worked. So here we go again, 7:35 mark of the first quarter. So the next possession down the court for the Golden State Warriors. Screen from Gary Payton. This time, you see that Steph actually turns the corner on Anthony Davis. I think he has a pretty easy layup here. I know that Anthony Davis is an incredible shot blocker. Stephen Curry is one of the best players in the league at those very quick gathers going up toward the basket, right? I think here he needs to just, I think he's trying to decide whether or not he's going to go up for it. He might've got spooked there by Jared Vanderbilt, maybe thinking that he might be able to go for it. I think this is, again, good offensive process. And if Steph goes up for this layup, it's just easy at the end of the day. Instead, he hits out Draymond Green, who is not a shooter, for the kick out. Draymond catches with one hand, whips it back to Steph, who continues running to the corner. Ultimately, the initial action worked here. Stephen Curry got to the basket and I think had an opportunity to go for a layup. That's the key here. He decided not to do it, made a questionable decision. Steph was almost perfect with his decision-making through the first 3.5 quarters of this game, maybe 3.25 quarters of this game. I can't really fault Steph for thinking that just with how long Anthony Davis is. But at the end of the day, I think Steph needs to go up and go for that layup. Here we go again. Engaging Anthony Davis as the defender in ball screens. Steph just hits the short roll to Gary Payton. Gary Payton goes up quick. This is good offense. This is an easy opportunity. That's at the 7-minute mark. That's a smoked layup. Smoked layups were a problem for the Golden State Warriors in this game. They just kind of missed a lot of them. To me, that last Steph possession is essentially a missed layup. This possession here from Gary Payton, this is a missed layup. We're going to see a couple more from Steph throughout the game. These are the kind of things that end up costing you games when you lose by three. The process was right here, though. So again, 6-minute mark, next possession down the court involving Anthony Davis as the ball screen defender. This is just a wild, you know, Draymond Green is always just kind of counting players. I think, look, he's over here on the, you know, top of the key wing area on the right side of the court. I think what he's literally doing here is counting players on that side of the court for his own team. He sees three guys on that side of the court for the Golden State Warriors. As soon as he hits the kick out, he's assuming that Gary Payton is just on that opposite wing or on that corner, I think, from having counted the players on the his weak side, where the pass was coming from in terms of the strong side of the court. So he assumes that Gary Payton's there. Gary Payton, I think, lost a shoe or something in the backcourt and was not there, and it looks like a little bit of a ridiculous turnover. Here we go again. This time they try to get to the screen out of a different action here. They get to a side ball screen so that Anthony Davis can't consider pre-switching the action. Here we go again. This is a JaMychal Green screen. You're going to notice Anthony Davis does not care that JaMychal Green is open. He's just going to sit in the paint the whole time, and he's just going to try and clog it up, right? Gets the defensive rebound, starts to break the other way. any screen in this game that was not screened by Anthony Davis's defender or Anthony Davis's offensive player, who could then short roll and make plays as a passer, I think was a wasted possession for the Golden State Warriors in this game. And they ran a lot of them, as we'll get to in the fourth quarter. This is the 4 minute mark of the first quarter. This is just straight up Stephen Curry off the court. They start running Jordan Poole, right? This is just a little double drag. Jamichael Green dives. Klay gets out to the wing. Open shot. Bang. They're trying to get the Warriors or the Lakers in ball screens the whole time. Again, Anthony Davis off the court. This time, you're going to see here, they're going to try and just create little opportunities and wrinkles off of these ball screen actions. They run the exact same double drag set here that they ran last time that got Klay a wide open three. Again, you're going to see a double drag set. Jamichael being the inside man, Klay being the outside man. Klay loops around. And then here, that's Looney. I'm sorry, not Jamichael. Then he kicks it out to the right side, and Klay just gets in front of Dennis Schroeder. And that is an easy counter off of that previous play that they ran off of the double drag. Here we go again. This is going to be Jordan Poole. They're almost running like a weird, it's not quite like a zipper action because, you know, like Poole's in the middle of the court. Zippers tend to be from, you know, screens coming up from the strong side. But, you know, Dante comes up through the lane like you kind of do in that action. Here we go again. Dante loops around, finds Kevon Looney's man, brings Looney up for the dribble handoff. Dribble handoff comes. Kevon Looney pans it off to Poole. Poole, open shot. Like, I think that he kind of has to take that shot and make it. He ultimately just misses. Someone asked earlier about Jordan Poole. We'll get to him kind of at the end because Jordan Poole being completely MIA in this series is a significant problem for the Warriors. Here we go again. 53 seconds left in the first half. Steph is back out on the court. Again, they're engaging AD. They're trying to involve him in every screen action imaginable. Here we go. Again, this is just simple. Because Anthony Davis is in the screen action, LeBron slides over into the lane as the low man on the opposite side of the action. Steph gets by AD just a little bit, creates the passing angle, wide open Dante DiVincenzo. That's an X out that Rui's a little bit late on. Wide open three, bang. 10 minutes now, it left in the second quarter. Early screen action there from Draymond Green. Easy bucket. All of these screening actions are just so pivotal. I don't understand what you'll see when you get to in the second half, given everything that we're watching right now. The Warriors were getting efficient offense throughout the entirety of the first half. They didn't take advantage of every opportunity that they had. They ended up at, I think, like a 107 offensive rating through the entirety of the first quarter. But the process was there. Here we go again. Gary Payton coming up, setting a screen. What you're going to see here is you're going to see some weak side action. Off of this Payton screen, you're going to see Draymond Green come down, set a screen for, I believe that is Klay Thompson. Lonnie Walker is in the game. Lonnie Walker played a pivotal role in this game, dropping 15 fourth quarter points, and we'll talk about that in a minute too. But I think that Lonnie and Austin Reeves probably haven't played a crazy amount together. They miscommunicate this action. Steph sees it coming off of the screen, hits Anthony Davis or hits Draymond Green for the wide open bucket. Wide open again because Anthony Davis is not in the at the basket. He's not the main rim protector in these scenarios coming over from the weak side because he's involved in that screening action. LeBron is the main rim protector, and LeBron has been a little bit late as the low man occasionally in this series. Really, really important stuff that they're pulling Anthony Davis away in order to have success. So here we go. Coming up from the side again, we're going to get a side ball screen from Gary Payton. This is just Anthony Davis kind of coming up a little bit too aggressively. He tries to stop the pull-up fake, and Steph just blows the layup. Unfortunately, he blows the layup, and that is the first of two that I believe he blows here in the little run that we're going to have here in the second quarter. Again, what you're going to see here, I wasn't able to get this full possession because the camera was all funky during the game, the production from TNT. Again, Gary Payton Jr., you're seeing setting the screen, Anthony Davis's man, slips it, and you just get Gary Payton wide open layup. All of these things are wide open layups. They're just the ball movement from Stephen Curry, who ended up with, it looks like, 14 assists in this game, was absolutely phenomenal. He ends up with 14 assists and 30 field goals. Taken. He was everything in this game for the Warriors. It's just they didn't utilize him to his fullest potential, I thought, in the second half, as we'll get to momentarily. We've seen very little adjustment, too, from the Lakers, I think, is the key thing. Very little adjustment in terms of the way they're defending these actions. Here we go again. This is LeBron actually involved in the action. Draymond Green ends up being that short roll man. Steph hits the short roll here. But we're going to see exactly what I was talking about on one of those prior possessions, where Draymond Green is going to come up and he's going to think he has an open layup here or an open lob to Gary Payton coming from that weak side corner. But because it's not Anthony Davis involved in that ball screen action, he is then that weak side defender as a rim protector. It's a lot different going up over Anthony Davis than it is LeBron James at this point. Because Anthony Davis goes up and contests, he makes it a lot harder for Draymond Green to put the right touch on that lob for Gary Payton. It ends up being a turnover to Lonnie Walker. Fast break starts the other way. That is why involving Anthony Davis in these actions is so important as we kind of run through this tape continually. Here we go again. This is Klay Thompson. He's going to come up. They're going to set just a really fun little keeper set for Draymond Green here. He's going to come up. Draymond Green's going to be the trailer. He's going to hit Dre as the trailer. This is an empty side keeper. These things are almost impossible to stop if you even screw up slightly and you're not in a switch coverage. Because they're not switching this action, it's just really hard for Anthony Davis to get his momentum going downhill again to really contest this. Easy gather for Draymond Green. Really easy layup for him. Here we go again. This one at the 4-minute mark of the second quarter now. This is Draymond Green being guarded by Anthony Davis here. He comes up, sets the screen. Anthony Davis comes out, shoots out, thinking Stephen Curry is going to go around the screen. Instead, Steph rejects it, forces the help in from D'Angelo Russell, or no, forces the help from Rui. Rui stunts as opposed to helps all the way over to the nail. And because of that, Steph gets a wide open lane to the basket. Unfortunately, another smoked layup for Stephen Curry. That's 8 points on smoke layups, or that one that Steph had earlier. He could have shot a layup on that quick gather while he had Anthony Davis on his back. These 8 points matter. You might not think it in the moment, but these things matter. They come up in big playoff games. Here we go again. Inbounds play comes up. Looney sets the screen. Steph turns the corner on Anthony Davis. This is at the 2-minute mark of the second quarter. And this is where Steph was just kind of in his bag at the end of the day. Steph was just absolutely phenomenal, being able to dictate the tempo and pace of this game when he was involving Anthony Davis in these ball screens. He almost kind of, he like splits the defender sort of. He didn't really turn the corner on AD, like I said a minute ago. But the big thing here is Dante, you can see him cutting from the corner because you see that D'Angelo Russell is the low man. He has to come up because Steph gets past Anthony Davis. Low man has to come up and help. That sets the table for an easy Dante DiVincenzo run to the basket. Layup, easy bucket. In between these two sets, I didn't actually grab this play, although I'm recognizing in hindsight it was a little bit important. At around the 140 mark of the second quarter, you will see Stephen Curry comes down, takes a ball screen from LeBron guarding him, who picked him up in transition, and Anthony Davis, who was being guarded, I think, by Draymond Green. And Draymond sets the screen. LeBron calls out kind of a lazy switch where I think he'd just been on the court for a while, and he just like kind of peeled off and said, AD, take it. Steph comes, makes a pull-up three, a sidestep pull-up three over Anthony Davis. That, I think, is the only other time before we get to the last possession of the game here, or the second to last possession of the game, where the Lakers actually called out a switch onto Stephen Curry with Anthony Davis. I just want to note that very quickly for the people. Okay, 1:12 left in the second now. Again, Kevon Looney comes up, sets a screen, gets Anthony Davis involved. Steph splits it, easy layup, and one. Steph was phenomenal. This is just the entire first half, I thought that the Warriors got incredible-looking offense. They, I think, had like a – I pulled this actually from Cleaning the Glass. Shout out Ben Falk's great site, Cleaning the Glass. They scored 52 points in 49 possessions for a 106.1 offensive rating. If Steph doesn't smoke three of those four layup opportunities, so let's say it's 58 points in 49 possessions, that is a 118 offensive rating, and that is absolutely phenomenal for a team against this Lakers defense with the way it's playing. The Warriors got great offense in this first half. And now, as Kevin is asking here, thoughts on Darvin Ham's defensive adjustments in this series. We're about to get to the one that I think is the biggest one of the series to this point. Here we go. The thing that I want you to see here immediately is that Anthony Davis is now guarding Andrew Wiggins instead of Gary Payton or Draymond Green. Why is that important? Andrew Wiggins is a very good player, you know, has made an all-star team by nature of fans voting him in. And, you know, has been a very, very critical part of this Warriors dynasty or this Warriors run over the last couple of years. He also is not the quickest processor in terms of passing and playmaking. So essentially, what the Lakers are doing here by putting Anthony Davis on Andrew Wiggins is they're telling the Warriors, okay, we're going to let you keep getting this short roll action, but it's going to be Andrew Wiggins that has to make the plays and has to make the reads, not Draymond Green or Gary Payton. And Andrew Wiggins is much worse at it than those two are. That's really important. And I think that as you're going to see, the Warriors went away from this throughout the course of the second half. And I think it was actually to their detriment that they went away from this in the second half. I'll have some numbers for you once we get to the fourth quarter. I believe that Bob Hulgaris, I was told over on Twitter, shout out Mike Zavagno, who kind of pointed this out to me. He said that Bob grabbed and said that they only ran six ball screen actions at Anthony Davis in the second half after they ran 24 at him in the first half. Essentially, Darvin Ham is changing the look that the Warriors are going to see when Anthony Davis comes up in screens. And they're doing it by not necessarily bringing that passing and playmaking out of the short roll and being able to have that kind of quick ball movement. So here we go. This is the first play. Andrew Wiggins comes up, sets the screen. They play flatter coverage with Anthony Davis. This is what they've been doing. They've been playing higher at the level of the screen in order to shut off Stephen Curry's pull-up jumper. That leaves the pocket pass open. He hits it to Andrew Wiggins here. Wiggins makes the right read here, but it ends up leading to a quick bucket. I think that they should have kept trusting Wiggins to make these plays, but that is ultimately, I think, what made Steve Kerr go away from this, is the fact that Wiggins is not the best playmaker that you will find on a basketball court. So here we go again. Wiggins comes up, sets a screen. Steph just throws the ball over to Clay immediately because he sees D'Angelo Russell. I don't even know if D'Angelo is napping here, really. As you'll see, like, D'Angelo is pretty engaged. He's looking at the ball. I think he just recognized that D'Angelo is kind of on his back foot a little bit and that Clay, with his quick release, would be able to get this off. He does. 57-49 now at the 10:30 mark of the third quarter. Here we go again. This is Wiggins coming up, setting a screen. Steph just tries to pull up here, knock down a kill shot, kind of. This is a classic attempt at let's stop a run, because the Lakers, I think, had scored seven in a row at that point. it's just kind of a shot that Steph makes sometimes and he misses sometimes. You live with it. Here we go. Now Moses Moody is the one setting screens. This is at 1:40 of the third quarter. They kind of went away from ball screen action for a large swath of that third quarter. They ran a good amount of them, not a crazy amount of them. And what I want you to notice here particularly is that I can't quite tell if this was ultimately meant to be a switch. It looks like Dennis Schroeder there, as you can see, is trying to get over the top of this screen action, which says to me, this isn't actually an attempted switch. This is just a switch that was forced by circumstance on the ball because that Moody screen was actually quite good. Ultimately, the result is that this ends up being a switch with LeBron James. And you'll notice that throughout the fourth quarter. The Lakers started switching LeBron screens onto Stephen Curry and asked LeBron to guard him in those circumstances. Here, they come back. Looney sets the screen. They ultimately switch it again with Rui, which makes me kind of wonder if the Schroeder thing was supposed to be a switch. The fact that he tried to go over isn't really what you do in switches. It's a little confusing. Ultimately, they did decide to switch it. Steph beats Rui all the way to the basket, gets the lay-in. Now we're into the fourth quarter. This is the 11:36 mark of the fourth quarter. As you will see, they set the screen not involving Anthony Davis here because Anthony Davis is guarding Wiggins. They set the screen involving Gary Payton, and I believe that is D'Angelo Russell. Russell's not the worst guy to attack necessarily, but ultimately, Anthony Davis is still there. He actually isn't needed here. LeBron makes a really good weak side rotation, but ultimately, you're not involving Anthony Davis in these screening actions, and that's a real problem. Ends up being a turnover because Gary Payton gets swallowed up by LeBron at the rim. You have LeBron at the rim. You have Anthony Davis coming from behind him to try and stop him. I just don't like this look for the Warriors as much. It's the 10:22 mark of the fourth quarter. Here we go. You're going to see this is kind of classic split action. Not really classic split action for the Warriors, but it's kind of a counter off of the split action they run. You're going to see this could very easily be kind of a stagger screen scenario for Klay to come over to the corner and take that split kind of kick out from Draymond Green. Instead, Steph just dives to the basket. I think, no, this is the classic split action. This is the split action. They got one of those earlier in the fourth quarter or later in the fourth quarter that I think we'll see. They started going to split action is why I pulled this is my point. Warrior split action has been very good over the years. It's not what was working today though. So I don't know why they did this. They decide to go to the split action. Steph tries to turn the corner here on LeBron. He kind of turns it, but ultimately the kick out is to Gary Payton. Gary Payton's a hesitant shooter. Results in a very well contested shot from Stephen Curry. I would just prefer you keep attacking ball screens because that is what worked in this game. So here we go again. You're going to come up. You're going to see that this is a LeBron ball screen scenario. Look who's there, ready to defend, ready to rotate in. It's Anthony Davis kind of stunting. And I think that stunt ends up forcing Steph into that quick little floater, that quick little push shot. The fact that he's there as the help man, as opposed to being involved in that screening action. I just don't love this look for the Warriors. I think that this is not the kind of look that works. They went into this quarter, I believe, leading 84 to 77. It is now 94 to 94 with 4 minutes left. They set this little double drag here, and neither of the screens are involving Anthony Davis. I just have no idea why you're setting this little double drag in semi-transition here. With neither of the screeners being Anthony Davis's man. Ultimately, Stephen Curry has to reverse it out to Klay. They kind of defend it well the whole way, right? Just really good, just shooting out onto these guys, out onto the Warriors every single time. Steph ultimately makes a pretty high-level floater after all of this. He looks a little bit like he's like looking up at the sky, like, oh my God, like I finally got one to go. Cause he was missing quite a bit throughout the course of this fourth quarter. Throughout the course of the fourth quarter, I went and tracked all of the half, like most of the half court possessions essentially for the Warriors. I've got them up until those final three or four little possessions. I believe 19 total possessions. Only four out of those 19 possessions involved Anthony Davis being involved in those ball screens. As we mentioned in the second half, only six ball screens involving Anthony Davis throughout the entirety of the second half. It's just not great strategy, in my opinion. This time they actually do run one. Here we go. This is at 3:30 left. This is a switch involving Anthony Davis. They do decide to switch this action here. But again, I actually don't think this is a switch if you look at the fact that Schroeder is trying to get over the top of this screen. If this is a attempted switch, like a strategic switch that Darvin Ham is coming up with, to me, you just kind of peel off here and you don't try and fight over the top and create a circumstance where Wiggins can dive all the way to the basket. That's not really the way that you switch screens in this circumstance. Schroeder ends up having to recover out onto it. This ends up being a really good look for the Warriors. Ultimately, Klay beats D'Angelo Russell here all the way over toward the wing. Dre gets called for a moving screen. I don't really love the call that Dre got hit with there. I think that it's not a great moving screen call, personally. As Stan Van Gundy said, I don't think it would have gotten reversed had they tried to challenge it because Dre was slightly moving a little bit. But I do think that at the end of the day, I don't love the call in that spot from the officials. This is a good look, though. Even if Dre doesn't set that screen, that's going to be an open look for Klay. And again, it's involving Anthony Davis in that main screening action by bringing him away from the basket. Here we go again. This time, LeBron is up, and they're just switching this action with LeBron at this point. As you can see, Schroeder goes under that action and just starts to like kind of grab Draymond Green. This is a full stop switch here. And this is just them kind of trying to make anything happen, trying to beat anybody off the bounce. You know, Moses Moody, Klay Thompson, Andrew Wiggins, Draymond Green, these guys aren't necessarily high level of beating guys off the bounce, right? That's not what they do. They're great players. It's just they're not high level isolation creators, right? It's not really what they do. So here we go. This is at the, I don't know, there's 1:43 mark of the fourth quarter now. Bring the ball down the court. Steph, here we go. This is again that little stagger action they ran earlier. Klay goes over to the wing, tries this shot. Ultimately, the Warriors are going to need a little bit more out of Klay Thompson, I think. He's arguably even more important than Jordan Poole. Inarguably, I would say more important than Jordan Poole. Jordan Poole has been worse than Klay in this series, undeniably. But these last two games, I think it was noticeable that Klay, I think he had 15 in game three and then did not play well tonight. I think he ended up with 9 tonight. They're just going to need more from Klay Thompson at the end of the day. They need him to be able to knock down shots. I will say that I think tonight, part of the reason the numbers were lower was just straight up due to usage. Klay obviously goes 3 of 11 from the field, 3 of 9 from three. So much of what they were trying to do tonight was Stephen Curry ball screen action. They just went away from what worked within that ball screen action, I thought, throughout the course of the fourth quarter and the second half in general. Here we go again. This time, they do run the action to get Stephen Curry with Anthony Davis in that screen. But what you will see here again. Oh no, this is not that. So this is just a Steph layup. This works. This works, right? This is not the end of this is the, I believe, one at the 111 mark, it looks like. 111 mark. Steph just splits this action, rocks Anthony Davis to sleep on the perimeter. That's what you can do. Like you can do that against Anthony Davis. You need to be able to understand where your strengths are. And this is going to be one of the most fun pieces of analysis that I've done yet, because as you will see here, with 40 seconds left in this game, Darvin Ham clearly calls out, "We're switching everything now." the Warriors throughout this game had not, or the Lakers throughout this game had not really switched everything. They hadn't done that. There had been some moments, as we've shown, where there were some peel switches that happened, where there were some circumstances where they were switching LeBron James onto Stephen Curry in those actions. But I had not yet seen a moment where they had purposefully and tactically switched everything. Here, you will see this initial screening action from Draymond Green. Auto switch, LeBron James onto Stephen Curry. Here we go. Here we go again. Wiggins comes up to set the screening action. You will see LeBron does not try and get over that screen as you would in some sort of drop or some sort of softer hedge, catch hedge, flatter coverage, whatever you want to call it. They switch this and they say, we are going to have the best defensive player in the world on Stephen Curry one-on-one. We're not going to do any of this ball screen stuff. We're not going to let you have an advantage on him where he's guarding in a different space where he has different responsibilities and ball screens. This is mano a mano, and this is what Stephen Curry is going to have to do. He's going to have to beat the best defender on planet Earth one-on-one to be able to take the lead in this game. Lakers up 102 to 101. And look, this is just Anthony Davis sitting down, being one of the best defenders maybe of all time. Like, he's certainly one of the best defenders to never win a Defensive Player of the Year award, forces an exceptionally tough shot from Stephen Curry. They get the rebound, and Anthony Davis comes out high again, high hands, ready to defend, ready to go again, hand in front of the face. Steph just steps back. Look, sometimes he's going to make that. Sometimes he's going to miss it. He got the space that he needed from Anthony Davis. But you know what? He missed it. And Anthony Davis did a great job one-on-one. Phenomenal job there adjusting by Darvin Ham. I've had as many questions about Darvin Ham as I think a lot of Lakers fans have had throughout the course of the season. I think Darvin Ham has been exceptional in this series. You can have zero complaints about any of the buttons he's pressed, any of the little things he's done. I think Darvin Ham has done a great job. And that moment right there kind of encapsulates it. Instead of doing what he's done throughout the entire course of the game, he gives them a different look right at the exact time he needs to give them a different look, switches everything. Anthony Davis forces two, Stephen Curry misses. We're now final possession, 15 seconds left in the game, 104 to 101 Lakers after a pair of Lonnie Walker free throws. And here we go. Stephen Curry is going to inbound the ball. Draymond Green's going to come up. And he's going to fake this keeper. This is classic hammer action from the Golden State Warriors. As you will see, Draymond Green is faking this dribble handoff and keeping it to go down toward the baseline. As you will see on the backside, Klay Thompson, and I believe that is Andrew Wiggins, are going to exchange and screen. And Andrew Wiggins is essentially going to set a screen for Klay to go deep into the corner to get an open three to kill the game. He keeps the ball here. They switch the action. Again, really smart by Darvin Ham, switching the action here. What you will also see here on the backside, LeBron immediately calls it out. LeBron immediately calls it out for Anthony Davis, saying, look, Klay is going corner. He's looking at the dribble handoff to start the play. He sees that it's a keeper, and he immediately calls it out. LeBron immediately calls out, this is a hammer play. We need to switch this. You need to get out to the corner and cut it off. Anthony Davis cuts it off immediately. The pass is not there. sometimes off of a hammer play, and I don't know if the Warriors were doing this here necessarily, you will have Wiggins set the screen and then dive to the basket, right? Here, Wiggins does not dive to the basket. He just continues to hold his screen on LeBron. I don't know if that's what they wanted to do here. You know, it seems like Draymond Green just kind of was looking for a bailout option off of that. Ultimately, the end of the day, it ends up resulting in a turnover because the Lakers saw the hammer action coming from a mile away, unfortunately, for the Golden State Warriors. We're just going to watch this again here. Just look at this. This is absolutely, absolutely perfectly defended by the Los Angeles Lakers. Switches the action on the handoff. LeBron calls out to AD the hammer. Turnover. That's your ball game. Absolutely perfect stuff, I think, from the Los Angeles Lakers defensively in that end of game scenario. And not good enough from the Golden State Warriors. I thought that they just did not take advantage of the opportunities that they had. They absolutely crushed any ball screens involving Anthony Davis in that first half. Absolutely destroyed them. I know we just went through all the tape, right? The stats say they had a 106 offensive rating. If Steph makes 3 out of 4 potential layup opportunities, that ends up being a 118 offensive rating, which is a monster in the playoffs. And they're up, you know, whatever, going into halftime. I think they'd be up 9 going into halftime. They go on that run to start the half where I think they got up to 11 or 9 or so. You're talking about like a 15-point lead potentially there. And then you start looking for the kill shots if you're the Golden State Warriors. Totally different game. Those missed layups matter. But the big things here now are, A, Darvin Ham has done a great job in this series and I think deserves a lot of credit. B, I think Steve Kerr did not do a good enough job in this game, frankly. I think he should have kept hammering all of those Anthony Davis ball screens. I know Andrew Wiggins is not your ideal person that you want in those screening actions, but you have to live with it. At the end of the day, you have to live with it and you have to roll with what brought you there in the first half, especially when Wiggins is not like a pure disaster playmaker. He's not good at it, but as we saw in the first play of that second half, he can see the reads well enough to make them occasionally, and that's all they needed out of him in that short roll scenario. There's also a case to kind of just long roll him. He's an incredible vertical athlete. Maybe you try and do something like that. Ultimately, I think the short roll is the right option, and just running more ball screens at Anthony Davis is the right option. But yeah, just wasn't good enough. The Warriors scored 49 points in the second half. Wasn't enough. Couple things for the Warriors. Jordan Poole looks like he's unplayable right now. I saw a question about Jordan Poole earlier here. This is from Kevin here. Would love to hear any thoughts you have on Jordan Poole. 0 points in 10 minutes in a crucial playoff game and stuff. Yeah, I mean, he hasn't been good enough in this series. Like we watched him, you know, earlier in this show miss a walk-in, you know, pull-up jumper that he typically makes. I don't know if, you know, sometimes the shots just don't fall. Maybe it's a confidence thing. But if Jordan Poole is not making shots and is not being an offensively dynamic player, there's no reason to have Jordan Poole out on the court. It's the reality of the situation. You can't have him out there because he's not good enough defensively. He's not a good enough passer playmaker. You really need him to be an attack-oriented offensive player. And right now, he's an inefficient attack-oriented offensive player. And in series like this that are razor thin, where the Lakers are as dominant as they've been at times defensively, and where the Warriors have showcased real potential to dominate the series in some ways offensively, as we just ran through. I just kind of don't get it. As Roscoe Starr 2 says, Poole needs to be out of the current rotation. I think I would play him his first rotation every night. I would see what he has going, see if he has anything going. And then I would bench him if he doesn't have it going. If he doesn't have it going, I would just not play him. I agree with the overall concept of this. They need something from him, though. Ultimately, again, I think that the adjustment from the Warriors worked reasonably well in this game in terms of starting Gary Payton, involving Anthony Davis in more ball screens, making sure there are always two short roll guys on the court. I thought that that was good. The question is now, do you do that again, knowing that they're going to start Andrew, they're going to probably guard Andrew Wiggins with Anthony Davis? Maybe. I don't know. I would probably just continue to start Gary Payton because I think the defensive upside that you got tonight, shutting down D'Angelo Russell, being an active, energetic, aggressive help defender, I thought that was worthwhile. And I actually don't think Payton was the one that took a lot off the court in this game. You just really have to be willing to trust Andrew Wiggins to be able to make decisions out of short roles and to be able to play Anthony Davis out of those coverages. I think they just didn't trust him to make those decisions tonight. And that's ultimately why we end up seeing their offense kind of fall apart half court wise in the second half. They got some good transition opportunities. I thought they tried to run a little bit more tonight. I don't know if the numbers bear that out necessarily, but anecdotally, just in my brain, it felt like they tried to run a little bit more tonight. Yeah, they're going to need something from one of their ball handlers, because Alex, you asks, who plays backup handler time if Jordan Poole is totally out? I would probably go Dante DiVincenzo and then run a lot of like Draymond Green handling the ball sets. I think there's also a case where you can run Andrew Wiggins led bench units, and he has some real success. For instance, like Rui Hachimura had in the first round series against the Memphis Grizzlies. I don't mind that idea when Stephen Curry is off the court. Because look, Steph, you're going to want to play him somewhere between 40 and 43 minutes per game. You're going to have to live with 5 to 8 minutes without him, and you're going to have to find a way to make it work. I think you slow the tempo down to a absolute crawl, and you have Dante, Wiggins, and Dre out there, and you try and just manage it that way. Again, though, I would try Poole for, you know, the first four of those minutes and see if it works. If it doesn't work, then you just take them out and you call it. But yeah, I think they have enough where they can get by. Trying to see if there's any other questions. If you guys have any other questions on this series, by all means, feel free to ask them. Someone asked about Jared Vanderbilt. Josh Vincent asked, how do you feel about Jared Vanderbilt playing only 11 minutes tonight? Also, do you think the Lakers have an optimal closing lineup, or is it better to ride the hot hands? I would imagine Jared Vanderbilt played only 11 minutes tonight because Lonnie Walker was sensational and they really needed his offense. They needed somebody that could come in and make contested shots in the way that Lonnie has shown throughout his career, that when he is confident and rolling, he can. He goes 6 of 9 from the field tonight. He has 15. I think all 15 of those came in the fourth quarter, if I remember correctly. I would imagine a big reason why Vanderbilt played only 11 minutes tonight is because of Lonnie Walker playing as well as he did. Do they have an optimal closing lineup, or is it better to ride out the hot hands? I would say I would want to have 4 of Anthony Davis, LeBron James, Austin Reeves. I would want to have those 3 out there. I'd want to have Davis, James, and Reeves out there. I think Reeves is a good enough two-way player to where you actually lose a lot if you take him off the court. I would, you know, probably 80% of the time plus have D'Angelo Russell as the guy out there, as the fourth guy. And then Yeah, I think you can ride the hot hand with the fifth if you need, you know, you can play offense, defense a little bit. Jared Vanderbilt, if you need a stop in a certain spot, you know, you can play Dennis Schroeder, Lonnie Walker, those guys. If you need offense, you can play Dennis to chase around Stephen Curry, trying to get over the top of screens, things like that. I think it really just depends on the night at the end of the day. Okay. Mass Hysteria also brings up a good point. Jared Vanderbilt lets the Warriors clog the paint too much with Lonnie in. We get to see LeBron be able to drive more. That is correct. I do agree with that. I think that is absolutely right. Yeah, I think that's all I've got on this series or on this game, at least. I think the Warriors win game five, is what I would say. I think that the Warriors are still very much in this series. I know that they're down 3-1, but I think they actually have a way offensively to beat the Lakers at this point, and they played well defensively in this game. I don't think this is dead yet. They just really need to take advantage of the opportunities that are presented to them, I think. In a real way. And then I thought they just didn't close well tonight, even beyond some of the schematic things. Like sometimes your guys are just going to have an off night. And it felt like Klay Thompson, Stephen Curry, Draymond Green, Steve Kerr, those guys had an off night tonight closing the game. So that's where I'll finish that. Shout out to the Lakers. They scratched, they clawed, they really battled throughout the course of this game. They did a phenomenal job, in my opinion, in a game that I think, frankly, they got outplayed for, at the very least, let's say, three quarters and change, maybe three quarters of this game. They got outplayed for three quarters and they kept it close enough, they kept it tight enough to where they were able to battle back and win. And that's the big thing when you're getting outplayed, you just have to make it close. You can't get outplayed by 15 points. You have to get outplayed by 7 points, like they were in the going into the fourth quarter, like 5 points. That's the key. And that I think the Lakers did a great job of keeping it close and battling and fighting. Okay. Let's take a quick break and then just some very brief thoughts on the Knicks Heat series and then the Nikola Jokic, Matt Ishbia suspension, non-suspension discussion that seems to be circulating. Okay, we're back. Knicks Heat now. The Heat win this game, like I said, I believe it was 109 to 101. And the Heat are now up 3-1. It was an interesting game insofar as it felt like Miami, even early on in this game, got whatever they wanted offensively, and that their process was just much easier than the Knicks was. Like Duncan Robinson goes 1 for 7 from three in this game. It felt like he very easily could have gone 3 for 7, and you know, this game blows out a little bit. Gabe Vincent goes 1 for 5 from three. Max Strus had a killer game. Shout out Max Strus. Longtime listeners of the show will know that I'm an enormous Max Strus fan, and I'm a really big fan of his overall game. And his overall confidence levels more than anything. Shout out to Paul. Shout out Lewis College. I think more than anything, the Heat are just having a much easier time getting what they want. And that comes down to two factors. First, they have, in my opinion, the two best players in this series in Jimmy Butler and Bam Adebayo. Bam was absolutely terrific tonight again. He had 23 points, 13 rebounds. I think he had something like five dunks in the first half. Like, he was just kind of dominant on the offensive glass, it felt like at times. It felt like he was really good as a cutter, as a potential driver. he was awesome tonight. But Jimmy's the key here. Jimmy goes for 27 points on 17 shots, 10 assists. He completely dictates the tempo and overall tenor of this game. And the funny thing about Jimmy Butler and what he's brought, he's only played three games in this series. The Knicks obviously won the game that he missed. At different times of this series, Spo has put him on everybody. Like, there was a time tonight where he was guarding Mitchell Robinson in order just to, like, probably get him a blow, I guess. Like, just try and get him, like, a little bit of, like, an active rest moment, maybe. Like, there have been a couple moments where he's guarded Julius Randle. He spent a good amount of time on Jalen Brunson and RJ Barrett, obviously. There have been times where he's been on Josh Hart and just flying around and help, right? Like, he's been a real defensive chess piece for them in this series, in that he can be utilized as a stopper at any point that Eric Spoelstra needs him to go on to Jalen Brunson. Think about game one, right? Like, Jalen Brunson plays pretty well in the first half, and then they go, okay, we're just going to toss Jimmy on him, and we're going to kill this right now. Jimmy does a tremendous job, shuts him down. They totally fall apart offensively in the second half there. The Miami Heat win. You know, RJ Barrett has a pretty good night tonight. Jalen Brunson has a pretty good night tonight. I don't know if I would say Julius Randle had a great night given his first half, but you look at the numbers, he still goes for 20 points, 9 rebounds on 8 of 13 from the field. He did have the 6 turnovers and fouled out. But in general, offensively, I think that the counting numbers say that their stars showed up. It's just that ultimately, they don't really have anything else outside of the stars right now. Mitchell Robinson just can't create his own shot unless he's trying to create an offensive rebound. Josh Hart, they're just leaving open. Like, he goes 0 of 2 from 3 tonight, 2 of 6 from the field. Quentin Grimes, it feels like his shoulder might be, like, I'm speculating that Quentin Grimes' shoulder might be bothering him still. You know, he still doesn't look quite right in terms of the jumper, I would argue. Manuel Quickley obviously misses this game. Isaiah Hartenstein, they haven't really figured out how to best utilize him offensively. His best skills are in the high post where he can create passing reads like to cutters and guys like that. They still haven't quite utilized him to his best potential offensively, even if he's been a useful defensive player throughout the playoffs for them. They just don't have they don't have anything offensively outside of those three guys. And those three guys are really good. You know, RJ Barrett included, now that he's really rolling. You know, he has 24 points tonight again on 16 shots. I thought he was efficient. I thought he was smart. Obviously, Jalen Brunson's terrific. You know, goes for 32 and 11 with only one turnover. I just don't think they have enough ancillary offense. They don't have enough shooters around those guys to get them the space they need to be able to be efficient offensively. Just feels like the Knicks are still a guy away. And that's okay. People knew that going into this year. This has been a great season for the Knicks. Again, they just ran into a really bad matchup. Eric Spoelstra will take away what you're great at. And when you are, you know, team stride stop, shout out Adam Spinella, he calls them that. When you are always going to stop in the mid-range, teams are going to be able to pack the paint and condense on you. It's going to be a lot harder for you to really get any sort of efficient offense outside of those stars, unless your guys are shooting from the perimeter. And they aren't right now. And that's because they need more shooters at the end of the day. And they need more off. I think they could use one more offensive creator. I think they need more shooters. They ran into a really great matchup with Cleveland in that first series. They ran into a really bad matchup in the second series against Miami, because Miami is able to control the defensive glass in a way that the Knicks kind of desperately need to be able to control the offensive glass in order to get second shots with how their offense works. It's okay. The Knicks, this is a great season for the Knicks. Regardless, I do think this probably ends in 5, if I'm being honest. I think that if Jimmy Butler had played game 2, it might have ended in 4. It's just a really bad matchup for them. And that's the reality of the situation. Shout out Eric Spoelstra, and we'll see if the Knicks can bring it closer than what I think, but it doesn't matter. The Knicks, the Knicks are playing with house money at this point, in my opinion. They have real flexibility moving forward. We'll talk about their offseason at some point. They are well positioned to be able to find success moving forward, in my opinion. Let's finish on the Nikola Jokic non-suspension, which is great. Thank God. I was very concerned that after I saw that, I was podcasting with Adam Spinella last night when that happened. We kind of made some jokes about it that, you know, Matt Ishbia, you know, learned how to flop from Tom Izzo playing for him in the 1990s and early 2000s. I mean, it's just, I get why Suns fans particularly are upset about the fact that Jokic did this and the fact that Jokic didn't get suspended. The Suns are unfortunately the party that came out on the worst end of one of the more egregious suspension decisions in NBA history, where they suspended Amari Stoudemire and Boris Diaw for leaving the bench after the Robert Horry hip check on Steve Nash. I believe that was in 2007 in the playoffs. The problem there is twofold. First and foremost, two wrongs don't make a right. We shouldn't suspend Nikola Jokic just because of some bullshit suspension 16 years ago. That just doesn't make sense to me in my mind. I think that's a bad idea. Second, they're just governed by completely different rules. And what I would say here in terms of the overall reaction is that I thought Matt Ishbia was the guy that caused this more than Jokic, I guess. Like, you can watch the play. Jokic goes over, tries to grab the ball because he tries to start fast breaks all the time. That's what he does. That's his calling card. Jokic is always trying to get the ball up the court quick enough so Denver can get a transition opportunity, everything like that. Matt Ishbia is holding the ball. Frankly, I think he was kind of holding the ball because this is me speculating. This is not a fact by any stretch. I think he was kind of holding the ball because he knew that. And former college basketball player, really smart, understood that Jokic tried to do that. He also is holding it and looks over at Josh Okogie. And that's fine. Like, I think that's a reasonable thing to do, is to look over at a guy that plays for your team and check if he's okay. And I think at some point it became absent-minded as opposed to like him holding it for a reason. And then Jokic comes out, tries to rip the ball out of his hands. You probably don't want to do that. Like, I would prefer that. I think he probably thought that Ishbia would just give him the ball, because if you're a fan in the stands, why wouldn't you just give a guy that is a player the ball? We should be giving deference to the players in this circumstance, in my opinion, not, you know, holding the ball and trying to hold up play. I frankly thought he interfered with the gameplay of the game, and I think there is a very strong case that he should have been ejected from his own arena, frankly. Ultimately, I think that his choices are what made this happen. Now, I also think this is just like, we need to chill a little bit also. Like, this was not that big of a deal, in my opinion. Matt Ishbia said as much. This was not that big of a deal. It would have been ridiculous for him to be suspended. It would have been ridiculous for Jokic to be suspended. I will say also, like, I've seen some people saying, like, oh my God, he entered the stands. This is a rule. Like, he entered the crowd. This is, you know, it's just a rule. You can't enter the stands. You can't enter the crowd. I'm not totally convinced that he actually entered the crowd based on the letter of the law, as it's written in the NBA rule book. The NBA rule book states that any coach, player, or trainer who deliberately enters the spectator stands during the game will be automatically ejected in the incident reported by email to basketball operations. And then it goes on to say the first row of seats is considered the beginning of the stands. And I think that line of demarcation of seats is actually really important. The NBA could have chosen to refer to this as the first row of fans is considered the beginning of the stands. The area in front of the fans is considered the stands. Instead, they specifically specify the first row of seats. And Ishbia stood up and was in front of his seat. Jokic never actually entered past the point of the seat. He never got to the seat area. So I actually don't think that based on the letter of the law about entering the stands and everything, that it should be an automatic suspension. Now, the league can choose to suspend anybody for whatever they want, right? They could have easily suspended him for, conduct detrimental to the league or, shoving a fan. You can do that, right? If Adam Silver really wanted to do that, he could have done that. Ultimately, I'm glad that he chose not to. I think it would have been a mistake. And frankly, I think it would have been kind of allowing courtside fans potentially to start trying to like goad players into situations like this, in that gray area between like the seat where the rule is written and where they stand up and watch the game. I don't think we want that. I don't think we want to set that precedent really, given that the line between like courtside fans and players is so loose and so gray in terms of how that actually looks. I feel like starting a no tolerance policy there is probably not a good idea, in my opinion. So I think this was the right call, like even from a long-term perspective in terms of like potential things that the league could have to manage down the road. Across the board, even just this was not a big deal, but also in terms of precedent, I thought this was the right call to not suspend him. This is going back to Denver. It is a 2-2 series because, as we've broken down throughout these playoffs, Devin Booker is emerging into a very clear top seven, top five, I don't know, player in the NBA. He's certainly been the second best player in the playoffs behind Jimmy Butler. The top three have been him, Jimmy Butler, top four, let's say, have been him, Jimmy Butler, Stephen Curry and Anthony Davis, in my opinion. Unbelievable, unbelievable performance from Devin Booker to bring the Phoenix Suns back into the series. And then Kevin Durant played even better than he did in game three, I thought, last night as well. Ultimately, the good news is that we're going to get these two teams playing at full strength in game five, trying to fight for a playoff berth. Speaking of game five, I will probably go live after game five. My guess is that I will go live and watch this game. I will probably not go live after Thursday's games, if you made me bet. It's not impossible that I do because I love this Warriors-Lakers series so much, but I actually have to go into the city here and film something else. So my guess is that I will go live tomorrow and not go live Thursday, and then instead we'll go live maybe Friday morning or something like that to talk Lakers Warriors. Swaggy D in the comments says, I just saw the replay again. The owner held the ball too long and Jokic gave him a slight forearm. I will also note Jokic like kind of noted in his post game that he felt Ishbia like kind of touch him with his right hand, like on kind of his hip slash like back area. And I think that's what led to like the little, minor forearm, gentle shove, I guess is the way to put it. Again, this is not a big deal. I'm glad that Jokic isn't suspended. But yeah, that's my current plan right now in terms of the podcast. I will probably go live tomorrow night after Suns Nuggets. And then we'll go live maybe Friday morning, potentially Thursday night. If the Lakers close out the Warriors and that ends up being like the end of a dynasty, potentially, I probably will go live after that because that seems like a momentous, important thing to talk about. We'll see. It just depends on what my schedule looks like. That's all I've got, though. This has been really fun. Thank you guys for joining. Thank you guys for listening. Thank you guys for subscribing to the YouTube channel. Please hit that like button, please, by all means. It does make a difference. It does really help the show get out there a little bit more. It really is valuable. So please hit that like button, hit that subscribe button to the channel. That way you'll be able to see when I go live. These all obviously get posted to the podcast feed after we talk about these things. That's why I've started, shout out Nikias Duncan. Nikias Duncan brought up that I should be calling out timestamps while we break down tape, so that the people who listen on the podcast are able to join, are able to kind of watch along and discuss and understand what we're talking about as we're talking about it. So I've tried to be a little bit better about that. Yeah, outside of that, that's all I've got. So go to The Athletic. I wrote about the Jokic thing with John Krasinski. Shout out John Krasinski. I will have a redraft of the 2022 NBA draft tomorrow. Go subscribe to The Athletic. Keep me employed over there. That would be phenomenal. Outside of that, though, that's what we're talking about here. We'll be back tomorrow. We'll talk about some basketball. Until next time, we'll talk soon. Bye.